This is Annuity Straight Talk. Since 2008, your host, Brian Anderson, has helped clients nationwide navigate the complex market for annuities. With Brian's assistance, hundreds of clients have achieved a profitable and secure retirement. I would know, because Brian has answered many of my questions concerning annuities and retirement planning. So that you can benefit as well, let's get started. Here's Brian.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Annuity Straight Talk podcast, episode number 43. My name is Brian Anderson, founder and creator of Annuity Straight Talk. Here to answer a bunch of questions for a good guy I met a few years ago, and I thought this one kind of fell into my lap. We've been talking a little bit in the past, since the beginning of the year. We've talked a few times. Kind of a cool story. I've known this guy for, three or four years ago. He signed up on the website, and I was living in Whitefish at the time, and I remember wife and kids, we were all getting ready to leave for the weekend in the summertime. I don't remember what we were doing, but I kind of had an open schedule, and so I was at the grocery store getting snacks and food and stocking the cooler and all that stuff, and my phone rang. And I thought, oh, what the heck? So I answered it when I'm walking around the store, and the guy said, hey, I signed up for your website a while ago, and I've been reading all your letters, and just want to let you know that I'm in Kalispell right now. That's right down the road. We're visiting our son who lives here, and I was wondering if maybe you had time to get together this afternoon. And I thought, and I mean, I don't get a chance to do that. I get a lot of people come visit me, you know, after we've done business, people that I've known for a while, but I thought it was really cool that he asked me to do that. I said, well, yeah, I've got an open afternoon, so sure, I can do that. And so, yeah, we went and met at a coffee shop, and we sat down, and we had a really nice conversation. And he was a few years out from retiring, so you could tell, you know, as with a lot of people, like, he was a really good saver, had done really well, really, really nice people. And yeah, I like him a lot. They're fly fishermen, too, so we kind of have that to talk about. And anyway, so, but he'd done a really good job saving and all that, but never really gotten into all the investments, so when you do that, it kind of, it's kind of like drinking through a fire hose a little bit. So it's, you know, and I talk about, you know, the 10 reasons people don't buy annuities, all that stuff way back in the first podcast. And a big thing is, like, you don't know what you don't know. And if you haven't paid attention to it for a while, it can be pretty daunting a task. Anyhow, so he's getting close to retirement within the next year. And he engaged in the conversations again, he's been reading stuff. And from time to time, he's emailed and asked questions. And that's how a lot of people do it, to be honest with you. One thing that's been good about the newsletter and now the podcast is people that work with me get to see me actively working on things and doing stuff on a consistent basis. I think it's nice for them. And then also lots and lots of people start researching these things well before they're ready to make a move. And for this guy, he's, you know, in his 70s now, and, you know, he's got a 401k with his employer. And so he doesn't have to take RMDs if it's a 401k, which is great for him. So he didn't really have a need to do it. And now he's at the point where, okay, it's time to make some decisions. So I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to show you. He wrote me this long email this morning and he had 15 questions about what I showed him. And he met with a couple other people. And it was one of those things where his other options were extremely dramatic. And I thought, I think the other two guys that he spoke with and got proposals from did a disservice to him. Would love to hear their reasoning, but I doubt I will. Anyhow, so I said, hey, let's go. Let's keep it simple. This is what I would recommend doing. And it's kind of cool. He's coming out here again in a couple of months. And so I might get a chance to see him again. I know he's, you know, he's got family and all that. So I may not be the priority, but so I will be available. And that's, he can attest how easy it is to get me into a coffee shop. It's not that hard. Give me a call. If you're in town and I'm free, I'll do it. So here we go. What I did is I simply copied and pasted his questions. Okay. It came in an email and I looked at it and I thought, wow, that's a lot of questions. And now, you know, if you're nice to me and you respect my time, I'll do a fair bit of work for you and I'll answer your questions. I'm a fairly patient person and I'm not immediately worried. I don't know if we'll do business, and he's not required to just because I spent some time doing this. And obviously this is what I get out of it. I get the opportunity for some content, and then it's potentially for other people. You know, a lot of people call me that don't really know, oh, I don't know what to think. I don't know what to do. Or, you know, I think a few months ago, I had one guy who signed up at about, five or six different places online to get information. And he got hammered. I feel bad for people that get it that way. I certainly understand that. I mean, just today I've had four or five brokers, wholesalers call me and, hey, I was wondering if you could use any help with your, I'm like, listen, no, I could use help by you leaving me alone. So I understand what it's like to have people hound you. And that's why I really try not to do that. So the newsletter, the podcast, they're out there if you guys want information. And it's kind of a low pressure way for me to kind of keep in touch with everybody, let you know how things develop over time. So anyway, but what I recommended this guy was just a deferred index annuity. And it wasn't necessarily what I think he should do, but it was a way to improve on some of the things he'd already seen. So it was right down his alley there, and I'll explain it as I go through it. So in the index annuity, so his first question was in reference to the plan that you sent me on page 5, there are 4 allocation selections. So for the illustration that I did, I elected 4 things that had 25% each. And he said, I am assuming the 4 comprise everything that the plan has invested, correct? And so I don't know exactly what he's asking by that, but I can essentially, the 4 allocations that I show represent the entire amount of investment, yes. So the entire amount of money that he puts into there was divided in 4 different areas. The contract itself, however, has another 12 options. So this is not how it has to be allocated from the beginning, rather it represents a conservative allocation that produces reasonable results. I'm not shooting for the top. I could show more. Okay. There's much more potential in the contract. We'll evaluate options on an annual basis. But again, I was just showing him it was an idea to say, hey, this is kind of how the contract works. This one's fairly simple in relation to or relative to the other ones you've seen. And so the idea was just to get him to show him how it works. Now, people will obviously, once they wrap their head around it, they might say, well, I think I'd rather do a little bit of this or a little bit of that. Okay. So question 2, one of the allocations was the fixed rate account. And so every index annuity has a fixed rate option where you can put a piece or all of your money in there. So he said, with the guaranteed interest earned on 25% of the portfolio or on the entire portfolio? That's a good question. Some people would think like, oh, the whole account is guaranteed 2.9%. But that's the fixed rate and 25% of the investment account is allocated to that. So the 25% will earn 2.9% for the first year. Now it doesn't have to be 25%. That's just what I did for the illustration. I was trying to make it pretty reasonable results. I wasn't shooting for the moon. We certainly could do that. Lots of guys do. But again, we want to demonstrate a likelihood of achieving a reasonable result. And the more conservative you are, the more likely you have it to happen. Now, obviously we're going to go for the most that we can get. I think I'll go into that later. So, and then every year you get a chance to change that. So like, right. In the past year or two, there have been a lot of people really concerned about the market. They said, just put it all in the fixed rate for the year and I'll worry about it next year, which with the S&P 500 being down in the past year, that was a good idea for someone to get, 2-3% in some cases, depending on the contract. So then we go into a question that a lot of people have. So he says, I don't understand the S&P low volatility daily risk control. And that is an index option in the contract. So it's a great question to ask, and this is a quick explanation for it. We can go into a little bit more detail, but the S&P low volatility daily risk control is an index that uses the S&P 500, but is managed for lower volatility than just the S&P 500 itself. So what they do is they use cash to balance with the S&P 500. When volatility is high in the stock market, the index is going to put a majority into cash to reduce the volatility and limit losses. When the volatility is low, more money is moved into the S&P 500 to increase returns. It's similar to what you do if you're actively managing an index fund to mitigate losses, okay? Essentially, if the market's real high and you want to switch to cash, maybe you switch a portion of your money to cash, reduces the potential losses if there's a correction. It's the same thing that managers do all the time. This is simply an index run by S&P. So then he asked, number 4 is, I also don't understand the S&P multi-asset risk control. So you can tell these are 3 of the 4. It's the fixed rate in these ones. So the S&P multi-asset is similar to the above, except the volatility is controlled by a daily adjusted blend of S&P 500, gold, and U.S. Treasuries. Again, it's kind of like an actively managed portfolio, but with a different blend of assets. And then he goes on to ask about the same with the Fidelity multi-factor yield. Please explain. I guess I didn't answer the 0% margin. So he'll probably come back with that. So this is similar as well, but Fidelity, instead of using the S&P 500, they use 6 different global equity and commodity index on the investment side. So they've got six different sectors of investments that they use, and they balance or control the volatility with a cash position as well. So it goes up and down depending on volatility in the market. The goal is to produce consistent returns. Insurance companies like these indexes because they have more price control. So you see less variability in your renewal rates from year to year, and they're set to do well in the 5 to 6% range or something like that with rates where they are now. And that's good for a conservative, safe investment. So obviously there's enhanced options, and then there's 2-year options. There's all sorts of stuff where you can drive that a lot higher. Lots of different ways to do that, but it goes into a little more technical details of the contract. So next question, on page 6, with no withdrawals and no growth, why does the minimum guaranteed surrender value reduce by $45,000 on year 1 through 10? So he was slightly mistaken on this. So that in the first year, the $45,000 in year 1 represents the maximum surrender charges and market value adjustment. The market value adjustment is the amount the surrender value is adjusted by changes in interest rates up to the date of surrender. So if you surrender it and the interest rates have gone up, there's going to be an additional negative adjustment to the account to your surrender value if that's the case. If they go down, there's a positive adjustment to your surrender value. So the minimum guaranteed surrender value is a state mandated portion of the contract. So they mandate that you tell different states require it. Some do, some don't. But the state is mandating that you put in the absolute worst case scenario for a full surrender. Now, what he missed, however, is that this declines over time. And by year 10, I'm going to scroll down a little bit, it declines to $0, and that's guaranteed. So it's going to reduce, the surrender charges go down over time. The market value adjustment is taken off at surrender. So you have a guaranteed minimum of no loss in the contract. Now, if people look at that as a raw deal, and again, like you've got commissions and risk with the bond portfolio reductions and cost of placement and all the expenses the insurance company has. If the contract works for you, the surrender charge doesn't matter, and it allows you to own something without fees. So plus surrender charges and market value adjustments only apply to anything over 10% free withdrawals in these contracts. So you can take money out if you want, and then you're not going to be penalized for it. And also death or terminal illness, nursing home waivers of surrender charges, things like that, where in extenuating circumstances, you know, if you die the first year, your family inherits the entire account value. There's no charges for that. Okay. So don't worry about it, but that's a great question because a lot of people are going to look at me like, what does that mean, right? And I had to try to be as technical as possible in case there's somebody who's going to be picky watching this and tell me I didn't do it right. Okay, so 7, at our age, we would be required to take the RMD the first year. This would obviously reduce that value further, correct? So he's talking about the guaranteed minimum surrender value. And what I said is the required minimum distribution would only decrease the account value, but would not affect the guaranteed minimum surrender value. The percentage of the remainder would be the same, but it's not going to be a negative effect on the contract at all. So my analogy, just like taking out of money out of your bank account. If you take a withdrawal out of the bank, there's going to be less money in there, right? So question 8, with the chart showing zero withdrawal, do you have something that could run that would show the values yearly with the RMDs being taken out? So yes, we can illustrate anything you want, including custom amounts each year. You can have 5% 1 year, 10% the next, 3% the next, and we can manually calculate what those withdrawals would be. There's also an option in all of the illustration software where you can just check a box and say RMDs for distributions. And it'll calculate, because it's got the tables in the software, and it'll calculate the account value plus what your required distribution would be for that year. So 9, with RMDs taken out yearly, I believe that you told me another 10% could be taken out yearly if needed without penalty, correct? Partially correct. This is something to clear up for everyone. You can take a total of 10% in free withdrawals each year. If your RMD is 4%, then you can take an additional 6% without penalty. So it's a total of 10%. The RMD will take that down a little bit, which this is not, according to their income plan, everything doing, this is not a deal breaker for them. So in the rare case when the RMD is greater than 10% of the account value, you are able to take the full RMD without penalty. Highly unlikely that would happen in this contract. Even if it did, it wouldn't be until they're in their 90s, which they'd be surrender free by then anyway. So it's a moot point, to be honest with you. In certain multi-year guarantees, any shorter term annuities, some of those only have interest available withdrawals. That might not be enough to cover RMDs. It's considered RMD friendly. Almost every contract I can think of, even if your RMD is over the penalty-free amount. They will not penalize you for that. Number 10 relates to something a lot of people see in the illustration, and it's irrelevant to any way I sell the annuities, but it's something that you need to understand. A lot of people see it and like, oh, wait, I thought, I don't know. So on page 2 under annuity payout options, am I correct that the monthly payment could be $3,404 with $380,000 still remaining at maturity? So $380 was what he's going to put into it. And you got to understand that those are two different things. The annuity payout option is just a option. It's what happens if you decide to commute the cash value for guaranteed lifetime income payments. If you take that option, there is no cash remainder, just guaranteed payments for life. So it's not both and, it's one or the other. And I said, this is only an option and not how I recommend using the contract. Now, where that might come in to be beneficial is if they have this contract for 10, 15 years, and it's there may be a point where it's advantageous, but all annuities have that. That's what makes them annuities, is the ability to commute them for a guaranteed lifetime income stream. But it's not that you get the guaranteed income and your principal remains intact. I mean, if I had $3,400 a year with $380 remaining at maturity, woo, like that's 115 years old. Geez. Yeah. I wouldn't have time to report a court of podcast. I'd be doing paperwork. So I kind of hinted in the next question. So it looks like this annuity could be in place until the age of 115. Is that correct? If so, and if we live that long, could we renew every 10 years until that age? And I tell a lot of people this, the maturity date is mostly irrelevant at this point. What it means when the maturity is age 115, it means that you have to do something with it. You either have to take the money out or you've got to turn it into guaranteed lifetime income payments by the age of 115 if you haven't done it already. What I tell people is if you're still alive and kicking at 109 years old and this contract's humming along, we'll start talking about it. But maturity doesn't mean anything except for that's when you got to exit the contract. You have to, okay? The 10 years only refers to the surrender schedule, nothing more. It only refers to the point in time when you have zero surrender charges. You do not have to change anything. He does not have to renew the contract every 10 years. Now, what a lot of guys are going to say is like, well, yeah, we'll just renew it every 10 years. They're going to try to sell him a new 10-year contract every 10 years. And that would be slightly greedy. It'd be really greedy. So after the 10th year, you simply have 100% liquidity and are not forced to do anything else with the contract. You can continue using it, working it, making allocation changes every year, picking your withdrawal. You can take up to 100% of the money. Okay. Pretty simple. So number 12, he gets more into his specific situation. Are you recommending that my wife sign up for the 10-year plan, or do you think it would be better to look at ones offered from 3 to 5 years, or to put some of it in 10 years and the remainder in something shorter? Of course, we have mine to consider too, either now or early next year. And that was the point, is they were doing it in stages. One of the things I didn't like about the other proposal he received is both of those companies told him that he should move all of his money now. And, you know, my recommendation was about 30% of their portfolio, maybe a little bit less. And I said, I think you should just, as you get to know this, you should step in slowly, make incremental changes over time. Remember, he's still working, has a 401k. So if he moves it to an IRA, he's going to have to take an RMD. That would be a bad move for him. He also has some really nice bonds that are like 4 or 5 years to maturity where he's making 5% on them. They told him to sell those. No, don't sell those. Keep them. So, and the point was, I showed him a 10-year contract because it holds the most growth potential. And I was comparing, I was up in a competitive situation, so I had to use the best numbers I could find. And again, I didn't go crazy and didn't show him the highest possible yield in the contract. I showed him something reasonable, but I had to have a contract that would stack up closely to the other ones that he had seen. So there certainly are other short-term options available, some being as short as 3 years. So that's one thing we do. Where I start, when I give you an option, I'm most likely just explaining the strategy or the idea, okay? And telling you how everything is going to work. In addition to that, we look at that contract and typically I give everybody options for different surrender terms, different products. And we usually look at probably 5 or 6 different ones, you know, within a range. I mean, I know which ones are worth looking at, which ones aren't, okay? But the idea is my first educational information, which is what I would consider this, is not a proposal and you're not locked into it. It's not the only thing I do. Okay, so then he goes 13. After we talked the other day, I got a voicemail, never talked to the guy, that was offering an annuity for 5 years. First year was either 4.5 or 4.8. In years 2 through 5, it reduced to 3.85 for an average of 4.05. I don't know if this was a great company or an A+ AM Best company. So he's talking about a fixed rate annuity, and obviously he's had a couple other, well, he's talked to a couple other people, and there might be some other people with his information. He's going to get a lot of phone calls because he's in the market for a nice annuity. But this is where, and I don't know that one off the top of my head. I could go look it up and find it, but I don't know if it's great or not. But it would be considered in one of the shorter term options. Now, fixed rates are looking pretty decent right now. And a lot of people will say, you know what? Yeah, I'll just take the fixed rate. I'll take the guarantee. That's an option, but it certainly would be something we'd look at when we look at additional options to make sure that he's comfortable getting whatever he decides to use, okay? One potential issue with the shorter term fixed rate annuities and even some short term index annuities, they don't all have 10% the free withdrawal option. So your liquidity may be limited. Some do and some don't. There's more and more have it these days, but you can't just go at the highest rate without looking at the details because you might be stuck with something. They'd probably all be RMD friendly, but still it might not give you the liquidity you want for income scenario. So, and these guys in their specific situation, their income needs, what they need to start drawing out of their portfolio and income is going to, it's more than their RMD. So they're not going to have to really worry about RMDs at all, but they have to have a product with enough liquidity to give them the income they need. So then he goes back to RMDs. With the RMD, are they withdrawn first of the year or whenever we choose? And you can take it any time in the year. So the required minimum distributions are required by April 1st in the year following your 72nd birthday. So you get until April 1st the next year. Every year after that, you got to take it out by December 31st. So you get a little extra time your first year, but then need to do it by year end after that. So if you wait until April 1st after you turn 72, you got to take one before April 1st. And then you also have to take another one for that year by December 31st. But you can take the amount in systematic payment or in a lump sum at any time. As long as it's before the deadline, you're good to go. So these guys have a feeling if they do it, they'll probably be taking systematic distributions throughout the year and won't ever have to specifically worry about the required minimum distribution. Okay. And this is kind of a good question a lot of people ask. So this is 15th and final question. I'll bet he has more. I should call this part one because every time I think these are good for people to see, it's going to answer questions for some people that haven't thought it through. You know, we get there's no stupid questions. There's little things that, you know, you've been taught, you've learned that you, things that you know that maybe seem to contrast with this or contradict it. And it's important to just know what you're not be afraid to ask the question because there's usually always a very simple answer. So he said, if we signed up, would the entire amount that we want to transfer to the insurance company be done on forms that you offer, or do we have to do it ourselves? You know that she has Fidelity and TD Ameritrade. So a lot of people look at this like, well, I don't even know how to get an annuity, so I wouldn't know how to start. The transfer forms are all part of the application process and part of the paperwork you sign. So a separate from the annuity application is a transfer form for anybody that's using a third-party custodian, right? You sign that as part of the application. The insurance company sends it to Fidelity or TD, and the two companies will handle it with themselves. So the form goes out from the insurance company to the resigning custodian. Custodian's got a certain period of time. They're usually all pretty good about it. Usually takes about 10 days to do the whole thing. So that's a question everybody has in their situation. And I'll kind of add something here. He's got a 401k and he can maintain tax classification on that, but his annuity is going to be a traditional IRA. So IRA to IRA, 401k to IRA, there's no taxes paying, there's no penalties on it. So that's just another addition to that. So anyway, those are part one of my annuity questions. And I think I'll probably do some more when I get more. I just thought it was a perfect opportunity. I was going to spend some time answering the questions. I'm happy to do it because he's a great guy. And we will maybe do it again next time I get a really good question. So that about does it for episode 43. If you have annuity questions or anything that you'd like clarification on this, you can go ahead and reach out to me. The questions themselves will be on the newsletter page when this comes out. I'll send it by email in a couple of weeks when the time is up for this one. And if you want to chat with me, you can call me at 800-438-5121. I explained to you how this guy got me in a coffee shop quickly by calling me on a day when I was free. Pretty easy to do. So Western Montana is beautiful this time of year. I'd love to see some of you guys come out. And if you want to meet up, let me know. So schedule a call by clicking on the top right corner of any page on annuitystraighttalk.com. If you need something from me or respond to the email that this goes out to, if you're on my list, this is going to be on YouTube. If you want to see the video, it's on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Go ahead and subscribe if you want to be notified as soon as they come out. Anyway, my name is Brian Anderson. I appreciate you stopping by. Thank you for hearing me out and have a great day. Okay, bye.
You have been listening to Annuity Straight Talk. The preceding information is for informational and educational purposes only and does not represent tax, legal, or investment advice. The views expressed by guests on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Annuity Straight Talk or its partners. No information presented today should be acted upon without meeting with the qualified and licensed professional. It is important that you read all insurance contract disclosures carefully before making a purchase decision. Guarantees are based on the financial strength and claims paying ability of the insurance company.